time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Jerry and Bob Haynes. Jerry and Bob Haynes are both with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. Jerry is a board member. Bob is a member of the Board of Sponsors. Both are members of the Medical Service Delegation, and they are going to talk about their recent return from Gaza. Bob and Jerry, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
So start out, tell us, where Gaza is for those that might not be familiar with it, and how is it that you have done, this is your fifth delegation to Gaza.
This is our fifth medical service delegation. Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility started going to Gaza for information in January of 1993, and we have returned in various delegations many times since then. But after the incursion of 2008-2009 called Cast Lead by Israel, when about 1,400 people in Gaza were killed, our dear friend who runs the Gaza Community Mental Health Program in Gaza, Iyad Siraj, invited us to come and provide some medical care. The physicians in Gaza are not able to move freely back and forth from Gaza to get their continuing medical education, so we have begun taking medical service people into Gaza to provide specialty care and to work with our colleagues. Gaza, it sits alongside the Mediterranean, was originally designated to be part of the half of Israel-Palestine, which would go to the Palestinians. That didn't work out. The Arab people didn't want to have the partition that happened in 1948. And so through various iterations, Gaza has become more and more isolated. Since 2007, Gaza, which is about 25 miles long, sort of the length of Lake Washington, and 5 to 7 miles wide, holds 1.7 million people, has been under a siege since 2007, which means there is no free coming and going into Israel and very limited coming and going into their border at Rafah into Egypt. So their goods and services are deeply curtailed and their physical movement back and forth of people is curtailed. Israel also has moved the sea border in from 12 miles to 6 miles to now 3 nautical miles, and so fishing in deep water is no longer available to a highly motivated fishing population.
It used to be the only source of their protein when they would get the fish, not only, but the chief source of protein, and now that's greatly curtailed, as you pointed out.
My understanding is there is very limited amount of just things like food, fuel, getting in at all.
That's true. Right now, because the borders with Israel have been greatly curtailed, a good deal of what comes into Gaza comes through the tunnels that have been burrowed from Rafah in Gaza through down into Egypt. Want to talk about?
There are about maybe
500
of these tunnels that are now operating, maybe 50 of them at a time, greatly curtailed on both sides. And it's a whole political system around those. Just for starters, the young kids, junior high, high school age, are the little beavers that dig down and make these tunnels. And some of the tunnels collapse. They're very amateurish. And so there are deaths just to the poor workmanship of the tunnels. It looks like a series of tunnels just in this one spot that allows for goods and services to come through. But as they come through, they are taxed by the Hamas government. And so that adds another layer of bureaucracy to the whole thing. These makes for a black market as well. So there's a different way of managing, say, pharmaceuticals, that the legitimate pharmaceuticals that people buy and sell in the retail stores are undercut by these black market things, and no one knows the purity or the duration of time that some of these drugs have been sitting in the sun, maybe months before they get through the tunnels, and so the efficacy of these medicines is also suspect.
One of the problems that we have seen, and there's a fellow who has gone with us twice, a toxicologist locally from Seattle, Steve Gilbert, who has reported on the difficulty of burning, or the difficulties associated with burning leaded gas. Right now, the fuel supply coming into Gaza is very much diminished. There's little coming in through Israel, which is where they would get their unleaded gas, and most of their fuel is coming in from Egypt, but even that has been curtailed, so that in this visit, which was different than one about 6 months ago, the lines for gas in the gas stations were maybe a mile and sometimes more than that long, and people waited sometimes up to 3 days to be able to get an allotment of gas. So the number of cars on the road in Gaza was really diminished this time, and again, most of the gas that's being burned is leaded, and because there has been a fuel shortage, also then there has been an electrical shortage, and the electrical shortage means that they have maybe 6 hours of power per day, and many people are burning leaded fuel in generators to be able to keep their refrigeration up or to keep their medicines safe, or for whatever reason. The hospitals certainly use generators for powering all their medical equipment on many, many occasions, and all of that leaded fuel going into the air is toxic.
This actually sounds like it is worse than Baghdad during the height of the U.S. war there. I mean, they had more electricity then there than it sounds like they have in Gaza.
It's episodic. Sometimes they have as much as 12 hours a day, but when we were there, they were about 6 hours a day they were having electricity. So it's hard to draw that comparison because it's so episodic, you know. And what happens is it's not just monocausal. The Hamas government pays taxes to the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, and Ramallah pays those taxes to Israel. And when the Hamas government decides that they don't have the money to pay the taxes to the Palestinian Authority then doesn't have the money to forward to Israel, so Israel cuts the power. And so it happens episodically.
Well, and not only that, but during Cast Lead, the incursion of Israel several years ago, they bombed the generation factory, so that there is no easy access to electricity is as you say, multifactorial and multi-layered and very, very political.
In a sort of more global way, the public health of Gaza has suffered and continues to suffer in a dense way. The lack of electricity also means that any sewage treatment that might happen, and sewage treatment plants were also destroyed, doesn't happen on a regular basis. So you see, it's visible to see partially or fully untreated sewage flowing into the Mediterranean Sea. And pretty much each time we go there, we see a dead animal in the Wadi Gaza having drunk that water and now died lying down in the water. So if you take a look at the public health of the place, and we go as a medical team, then it affects everything that goes on there. The electricity has an effect on medicine. The water has an effect on medicine. The air has an effect on medicine. The constant possibility of air attack has an effect on certainly on the emotional and medical, emotional health of the people. One of the things that I've done is work with groups of people who are trying to work with the traumatized population. And these 1.7 million people are all traumatized through the lack of good access to public health for one reason, and then also from the possibility of attack constantly. And one woman in a class that I was teaching said, you know, every day my child comes home from school and says, Mommy, what if we're attacked today? What if we get bombed today? She said, I have a struggle with what do I say to my child. How do I respond to my child to say, I don't know the answer to that question, because I really can't say to him, well, we're not going to be, because I don't know that. So when we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder among our troops. When I teach a class in Gaza, we talk about continuous traumatic stress injury, that it's a constant for them.
Well, by there we can hear the F-16s fly overhead and just break the sound barrier, kaboom, kaboom sort of thing. It's a very unnerving experience. You were referring earlier, Jerry, to the sewage treatment going into the water, and it reminded me that with the curtailing of fishing into the deep water, they're now limited to fishing in the shallow water, which, of course, is now polluted. So that just further compromises the whole business. And just one more layer of this, commerce in general is limited greatly, so that these people, very industrious people, these are not people who are a slothful group population, and very well educated, highly educated. But they want to get ahead. They are entrepreneurs, and they can't sell their goods, because the goods can't go out of the country and move back and forth. So they're impoverished on several levels, and one of those is just they can't sell. Vast quantities of food can be made and to grow, and then sit rotting in the fields. So because they are not allowed to sell it to Europe as they used to do, or to Israel as they used to do. Which brings up another point, which is as they are all hemmed in by this wall, what used to be more or less friends or have a working relationship with the Arabs of Gaza, with the Israel population, they worked in their houses and in the streets and so on of Israel. Now the only exposure these people of Gaza get to the Israelites is at the end of a gun. So they just see a very bleak image of their neighbor that surrounds them and holds them in, not something that would produce good friends and good relationships for future country building.
The border, the long border of Gaza with Israel, has aquifer feeding areas from the sort of rainwater rivulets that flow underground. Water has become such a major problem for these people. The United Nations reports that between 90 and 95% of the water is polluted. The water that would feed their freshwater aquifers now is being pumped from the border through wells that have been drilled on the Israeli side and now pull the water into Israel for their really lovely fields of sunflowers and other crops that are being grown on the Israeli side. For about 300 to 500 meters along that border, there is a no-go zone, what's called the security boundary from Gaza to Israel. That no-go zone, which runs the whole length of Gaza along the Israeli border, is not to be entered by the people of Gaza. And that area holds approximately one-third of the arable land. So a generous proportion of the place where Gaza could grow crops is now not available to them through the armed wall that separates Gaza from Israel. There are people know that they will be fired on if they enter into that area. And in fact, that's happened. Also in the sea, Israel patrols that 3 nautical mile border, and so if a fisherman goes anywhere near the border, they are fired on. So it's a heavily externally occupied area.
So as a medical delegation, you said, Jerry, that you counsel people when you're there. What else does the delegation do?
Well, the primary part of our delegation is physician interaction with physician. Bob, why don't you talk about
that? I love going there because the physicians there, first time I went as a cardiologist, I thought that I would be going to sort of third world country. Gee, I would have to teach them, you know, very basic things about cardiology. Boy, I was so wrong. They, as I mentioned, were highly motivated, highly educated, but often did not have access to the medicines and the technology that we have, nor the, as Jerry mentioned, the continuing medical education. They can't just leave and go to an international meeting to be brought up to speed on the latest techniques. And so just going there, I love this on several levels. One is it's humbling for me because these young men and women, by the way, a lot of women going into medicine there, are able to tick off the, you know, the five best ways to do X and the 13 things not to do with Y. And so very sharp and learned, but maybe they don't have the medicines to be able to do X and Y and Z. So it's humbling to see how they work around this. They do, if someone has a very bad illness, they do work ways to work with the Israeli hospitals and try to get into those hospitals sometimes. But the chief route for very difficult heart surgery would be to go to one of the Arab hospitals in Jerusalem or Ramallah. And there was a third city in Israel that they could go to in the West Bank. So the part that's heartening for me is to go there and have them smile and greet me and just realize that they're not forgotten, that the rest of the world hasn't completely forgotten them. And they just going there to be a colleague with them is a moving experience, and just to work with them side by side.
The amount of work that we can do is limited. Of course, we go in for a week or two, and so we are limited by time and access. But indeed, one of the people who has been traveling with us is Dr. Richard Grady, who's a pediatric urologist from Children's Hospital. And Rich and his colleague Ismail Zamilpa in this last journey were greeted again by their colleagues in the hospitals and operate on complex pediatric urologic challenging children for the whole time that we're there. This time also we were joined by a pediatric anesthesiologist who worked with them at least part of the time, and he also is a pain management specialist, so he was talking with people about setting up some pain management clinics there. But Rich Grady has done a Herculean job of going in and working and teaching, and wants now to focus on teaching even more than we have in the past from more of a broad spectrum look at the problems that have been identified in Gaza. There's a lot to do, but and we are a very small group of people. We would invite, of course, medical specialists to join us on our next delegation because they're particularly looking for people who know something about children with autism and plastic surgeons who could do reconstructive surgery. Well, there are a number of specialty groups that they would like to have us bring in. And again, we're a small group doing a token of work. But as Bob says, part of the mission is to just say that these are not forgotten people, because it's so hard for them to have transport in and out.
Are you in any danger when you're there? I'm thinking in terms of people that are considering wanting to join this.
You know, every time I organize one of these these delegations, somebody says to us, how dangerous is this? Well, and, you know, there's a flip answer about traffic in Seattle. But, in fact, going into the Middle East always has some kind of onerous possibility associated with it, but we feel very safe when we go into Gaza, as safe as, I don't know, it's just not something that I am been very deeply concerned with, even at all. People are protective of us.
Absolutely. The people are so appreciative, and I do my pantomiming conversation with people, and they love it. And, you know, where are you from? You know, what's your name? And so I get into these things in a marketplace or on a street, and they just love it. We're from America. Hey, welcome. come here, mister, we show you. And you know, if one can make generalizations about a population which has lots of problems with that, but if one can make a generalization about the Arab culture, it would be that these people are very, very gracious and would invite you, anyone would invite you into their home. And these are not homes that are, have lots of luxury and extra to give. But, boy, whatever they have, they will give it to you and invite you to share in a meal on the spot. I mean, it's you know, I work with these people, and it's not just the doctors, but the staff, the nurses, and the cleaning staff, and I mean, anybody. And just, please come here. Oh, come to my family. I want to show you this. And so it's a gracious group of people that really look after you and appreciate you.
They're also a group of people who have experienced extreme tragedy with the terrible things that have happened with the siege. Not just attacks, but the diminution of public health have come specific tragedies. This time I met with a woman who had put her three small children to bed, responding to their wish that they would have light in their room. And since there was no electricity available to them, she lit a candle to provide them with light. And the children were like 2 and 3 and 5. And then she had a 6-month-old baby, so she had gone into an adjoining room to feed her baby and through exhaustion fallen asleep, to awaken to the crackling of fire, and her three small children were all killed in a blazing fire in the adjacent room. So I met with her in the time of her sorrow and tragedy, and a number of members of her family who were all also deeply grieving and confused and horrified by what had happened. While we were in Gaza this time, several horrible things happened like that, not like that, but associated with the siege and the lack of electricity. It was during the soccer tournament, and a 20-year-old and a 21-year-old, two men from the same family, had tried to rig up some electricity so that they could watch the soccer tournament, and they were both electrocuted. And then also there was a young man who was showering, preparing for his wedding, and he was powering the light in the bathroom by a generator, and he was killed through carbon monoxide poisoning while he was showering for his wedding. These terrible tragedies then become known throughout Gaza, and the community of 1.7 million people grieve this awful consequence of the life that they are unable to affect in a positive way. And yet the resilience of these people is stunning and inspiring and compels us to keep going back and to invite others to come with us. And truly, the people who guard the checkpoint at Eretz, which is from Israel into Gaza, have been very helpful to us in being able to get from Israel into Gaza. And while we are under high security surveillance going and coming and going and coming from Ben Gurion, we have found wonderful allies who want this problem from Israel to Gaza to end and are extremely sensitive to their rather precarious position in wanting to have a more humane process between the Israeli people and Gaza. The Gisha, which is a legal organization in Tel Aviv, works hard every day on trying to end this siege, and Physicians for Human Rights Israel works constantly in trying to make this situation eradicated. So when we talk about going into Gaza, we know that we have allies on all sides of this issue. We met this time with the Palestinian Prime Minister in Ramallah, and he also expressed his wish that this siege would end and there could come a time of peace. And so I say this always, that we go there with the feeling that this is the crucible of our world, that where the Abrahamic traditions have come together and people of no faith have come to regard this area as an area of high conflict. I always look at it and think, if the human family could come to a sense of peace in this crucible, that perhaps there would be a possibility, a potential for the human family to become peaceful throughout the earth.
Only a couple minutes left and not enough time to cover this, but the U.S. has a role in this. I mean, that's part, I would gather that's part of your motivation in going there.
That's one of the reasons that I go is, we see these pictures of terrible tragedies around the globe and earthquakes and mudslides and tsunamis and Haiti storms and poor people devastated by natural disasters. Then we look at this disaster, and while it's terrible and it's a disaster, it's not natural. It's something that has been constructed by the politics of the world, and right now our taxes are, the United States taxes are paying billions of dollars per year toward the continued support of the State of Israel, and for lots of good reasons. But there are some bad things that happen in this walled-off enclave of Gaza is one of those. So, yes, it is a motivation for me as I pay my taxes to lots of things in the world the United States does. I'd like to go in and play some small role on my own to try to make this Gaza situation better.
We're talking with Jerry and Bob Haynes, both with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility and having just returned from a medical delegation to Gaza. How can people find out more about the delegations if they want to join? How can they support a future delegation if they can't join?
Well, again, our supporting organization from the United States is Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, and you can go to the website, WPSR.org. And if you wanted to contribute to the purchase of medicines, one of the things that we've been doing is taking in medicines for the Gaza Community Mental Health Program, because each time we go in, their shelves are empty, and they're very grateful for medicines to help this traumatized population. So you can make a designated gift through WPSR, or if you wanted to go with us to Gaza, and we would welcome you, you can contact me through WPSR, and I'll happily give you information.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for making this possible.
Again, just talking with Jerry and Bob Haynes, both with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. And you can find out more about their work via WPSR's website, wpsr.org.